The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, Episode 9.
Hey folks, welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here and happy to be here. A few details first. Please head on over to culinarylibertarian.com/podcast, and there you'll find my social media icons, and you can click over to my Facebook or my Twitter or Instagram or Pinterest, or you can subscribe to my YouTube page. Also, I've got some swag for Patreon supporters, a Culinary Libertarian bumper sticker for the $3 monthly donation, or a Culinary Libertarian coffee mug for the $5 monthly donation. Lastly, please find this show on iTunes or Apple Podcasts and write a positive review and leave me a comment. The more positive reviews the show gets, the more people will see it, and the more they'll get cooking.
Today I'm going to talk about the first Thanksgiving, both of them. We all know about the feast with the Indians and the Pilgrims and how everything was sunshine and daisies. Well, I'm going to ruin that myth for you. I'm also going to destroy the part where they told you it was the first Thanksgiving. It's probably the first one with a feast, but not the first giving of thanks from men reaching the shore of the New World. I do want to say that I am not working at dissertation levels here. If you wish, there is plenty to find on these topics. I am going for the big picture, but I think it is the right and proper one. Also, I'm not really interested in the appropriation of culture debate. Culture isn't a static, unchanging thing, and no one owns a culture. I'm going to start with the second first and do the first second. Richard J. Mayberry, writing for Mises.org, wrote an article entitled The Great Thanksgiving Hoax, and I'll have links to that article on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/9. I'm going to read a few parts from this piece. Quote, "The official story has the Pilgrims boarding the Mayflower, coming to America and establishing the Plymouth colony in the winter of 1620-21. The first winter is hard, and half the colonists die. But the survivors are hardworking and tenacious, and they learn new farming techniques from the Indians. The harvest of 1621 is bountiful. The Pilgrims hold a celebration and give thanks to God. They are grateful for the wonderful, new, abundant land he has given them. The official story, then, has the Pilgrims living more or less happily ever after, each year repeating the first Thanksgiving. Other early colonies also had hard times at first, but they soon prosper and adopt the annual tradition of giving thanks for this prosperous new land called America." End quote. Mayberry cites the book History of Plymouth Plantation in various places in his article, and I'll have a link for that also on the show notes page. Mayberry continues, quote, "The problem with this official story is that the harvest of 1621 was not bountiful, nor were the colonists hardworking or tenacious. 1621 was a famine year, and many of the colonists were lazy thieves," end quote. He continues, quote, "In the harvest feasts of 1621 and 1622, all had their hungry bellies filled, but only briefly. The prevailing condition during those years was not the abundance the official story claims. It was famine and death. The first Thanksgiving was not so much a celebration as it was the last meal of condemned men," end quote. To speak of the conditions of the Pilgrims is to speak about economics. Yes, farming too, but the Pilgrims came to the New World to build the perfect society and take that back to England and replace the corrupt system they left with the perfection they created. Except, it was far from perfect. The system was socialism. Richard M. Ebeling wrote an article entitled Thanksgiving, Celebrating the Birth of American Free Enterprise, and he writes, quote, Their goal was the communism of Plato's Republic, in which all would work and share in common, knowing neither private property nor self-interested acquisitiveness. Well, it failed. For 2 years, socialism failed. Desperate to survive, they few who remained, they tried private property. Each, as was needed, was given a plot of land to tend. Eat what you grow. The result was the Plymouth colony experienced a great bounty of food. Private ownership meant that there was now a close link between work and reward. End quote. From almost any position, that sounds like a good refutation of Marx and socialism and a shout out for private property. And as it stands, I suppose it is. Except that's not really the whole of the story either. As I dug, I discovered that the story we just heard has at least one gaping omission. Kevin Carson writes in an article for the Center for a Stateless Society, an article directed at John Stossel, the journalist. In his piece, which I'll link to the show notes page at culinarylibertarian.com/9, Carson writes, in part, quote, "The Plymouth story is sometimes compared to that of agriculture in the last days of the Soviet Union, where most of the food consumed came from private family plots. This parallel is entirely accurate. What the received version of the Plymouth story leaves out, however, is that the role of the collective farm in the little drama is played not by naive Puritan zealots seeking to hold all things in common, but by a private corporation chartered by the English crown." End quote. Carson concludes, quote, "So the proper analog to what almost killed off the Pilgrims is not, as Stossel says, Karl Marx or today's politicians and opinion makers. It's the lord of an English manor or a Fortune 500 corporation. The merchant adventurers, like the Fortune 500 companies of today, was a chartered corporation that depended entirely on benefits and legal privileges conferred by the state." End quote. The state, the government, is to blame. Perhaps not entirely, but certainly more than we've been told. On to the first Thanksgiving. My primary source for this information is from the website berkeleyplantation.com. I'm going to go pretty quickly through the narrative to get to the main point. The site is well worth reading. Times were harsh and difficult in the 17th century England. The wool industry was failing. New source and a new place was needed for raw materials. John Woodleaf was selected to captain the good ship Margaret to Virginia to land at Berkeley Hundred. They set sail on September 16, 1619. After a brutal 2.5 months at sea, the ship dropped anchor on December 4, 1619 in the King James River, Virginia, the Berkeley site. From the Berkeley Plantation webpage, quote, "As Clifford Doughty noted in his book, The Great Plantation, the men were rowed ashore, placed their personal luggage on the hard ground, gazed at the woods enclosing them, and listened to the complete silence. Then, at a command from Captain Woodleaf, with which they were profoundly stirred to comply, the homesick men knelt on the dried grass to pray. As instructed by the London Company, Woodleaf prayed, quote, We ordain that this day of our ship's arrival at the place assigned for plantation in the land of Virginia shall be yearly and perpetually kept holy as a day of thanksgiving to Almighty God, end quote. You see, the Berkeley Company had given a very specific list of 10 instructions to the settlers when they departed England. The very first instruction was, upon landing, that they give a prayer of thanksgiving for their safe voyage and to do so annually and perpetually thereafter. America's first official English-speaking Thanksgiving had just occurred, 1 year and 17 days before the Pilgrims landed in Massachusetts, and almost 2 years before the Pilgrims held a three-day harvest feast with their Native American friends, which is commonly thought today to be the first Thanksgiving. End quote. I'm sharing this to show that, in the words of Paul Harvey, there is the rest of the story, which too often we seem not to know. The whys and hows are another show. Let's move on to our feast. I am a turkey person. This year I plan to do something a bit different. I have long struggled, as most cooks do, and I can attest that my grandmother did, with overcooked breast meat and barely cooked leg meat. Or the whole bird is incinerated to sawdust and no amount of cranberry sauce or gravy will fix it. You know I'm right. The solution is simple, but it violates the sanctity in the presentation of the whole bird. The solution is break the bird down into at least three parts, the breast cage and the two leg quarters. Since they do not cook at the same rate, it seems silly to keep them attached. I will brine them. Yes, brining turkey is a must-have, a must-do, and brining is also a very good way to help keep pork and chicken moist. You can find my recipe at culinarylibertarian.com/turkey. Thanksgiving is kind of a busman's holiday for me. Now, I don't mind, but it drives my wife crazy. I spend far too much time in the kitchen to her pleasure, but I guess that's the busman holiday part. I find there's always something more to make. Last year I made chocolate mousse just because. I did and will make this year my pumpkin cheesecake. I know there are some of you who say, "Oh, I hate cheesecake." I get it. Every person who has said that to my offer has agreed this cheesecake isn't the yucky, crappy one they hate. Yes, it is just that good. Some of our must-haves are my wife's grandmother's dressing. Lots of dressing. And yes, not stuffing, dressing. We don't really so much need the turkey, except we kind of do, because we want turkey sandwiches the next day. Oh, and the post-turkey pizza. That's now a thing. Regardless of your feast offerings, allow me a moment of didactic to reflect on what treacherous journeys we've made. My sister and I recently lost my brother. Of that original five, parents and kids, we two remain. I am thankful his pain has ended, but I'm mad as a hatter that cancer got another one. I'm mad also, angry, well, lots of things, for his family, that no good thing comes from cancer. On the upside, my kids are about as amazing to me as they can be, and we all are doing well. All right, that's enough of that. Enjoy your meal. Have a glass. Yeah, have at least a glass of Nouveau Beaujolais for me, and I'll see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving. All right, folks, that's going to do it for today. The first two parts of that episode were a little stiff. I apologize for that, but I really didn't think I had any other choice than to write everything, including my own narrative, just to make sure I stayed on point and got the right information across. Obviously, the last part with me just talking about Thanksgiving dinner, well, that was unscripted. I try to go off the cuff and spontaneous as much as possible, but history is not the strength that food is. Folks, as I'm recording this, next Friday is Black Friday, and we know that there are lots of sales in the stores, but it's also an excellent opportunity to save online, Two of my affiliates, Bluehost and Liberty Classroom, have their best deals of the year that weekend. If you want to know what those deals are, go to culinarylibertarian.com and sign up for my email letter, and I will send you information and links for Liberty Classroom, which is Time Wood's program of lectures and videos about economics, politics, and history, as well as a course on logic, information that we didn't get in school. And obviously, we just found out there's a lot we didn't know about Thanksgiving. Liberty Classroom fills in all of those gaps, gives us the education we were denied. Bluehost is a web host service, and I use them for my blog. They also are going to have an excellent deal if you think you want to run a blog or have a podcast with the show notes or start an online business and you've got a service you want to provide. You're going to need hosting, and Bluehost will have the best deals of the year this weekend. With both of my affiliate links, use those and send me an email with the receipt, and I will have added bonuses for your purchase to help you get going on your new blog or give you some more information to read about liberty or politics or economics, just to keep the wheels turning, so to speak.